Hello, I'm Alan O'Donoghue. I'm a teacher of computing at Our Lady's High School in Preston. And I'm not professing to be an expert, but if you know more than I do, then please point me in the right direction. This is the second podcast where I'm recording episodes from my classroom, some reflections on the kind of things I'm doing with a Year 10 GCSE computing class that I'm teaching. If you want to hear more about this, previous episodes and future episodes, you can search for them in iTunes by searching for Techno Teacher, T-E-K-N-O Teacher, or Alan O'Donoghue, which is my name, and either of those will direct you to my audio booze. If you listened to the last one, you might have noticed there was a mistake. I was referring to using Python in two different modes. I said that it was the editor mode, and I incorrectly referred to the imperative mode, where I should have said, yes, you guessed it, the interactive mode. That's what I should have been calling it. So that's that. Now, I have five lessons a fortnight with my Year 10 class. There's 26 children in the class. It's 23 boys, a bit heavy on boys, and three girls. And this week we've had two lessons. We had our first lesson on Monday, and we had our second lesson of the week this afternoon. So I'm going to go back to the first lesson on Monday, and the focus in Monday's lesson was computing theory, and we were continuing from the previous lesson of computing theory where we're discussing, trying to understand what a computer is, and this particular lesson we were focusing on things like hardware, software, input, output, process, storage and transmission. Quite a lot to fit into one lesson. So to lighten things up, I decided to play a game at the beginning of the lesson. A game where people have to jump up and down and do all sorts of things that you don't normally do in a computing lesson. And I suppose choosing to do this first lesson on a Monday morning made it a bit more of a challenge. So I decided to test the children's understanding of hardware and software. We're going to play a game called Hardware Software Cake. So the basic principle of the game is I'm going to shout out to the class different things, which may be hardware, maybe software, or maybe a type of cake, and they have to identify the correct one. So if they thought it was hardware, they had to stand with their body upright like a capital H, so arms out, legs out like a capital H. If it was software, if that's what they thought it was, then they had to sit down in the seated position with the head curled in, so like their body was shaping an S for software. And if it was cake, then using their head and their arm, they had to curl it round like a capital C, but chomping on a piece of cake. So to get things started, I shouted out, 1 terabyte hard drive. And of course, the class looked round. Most people thought it was hardware, so they all stood as a capital H. Then I said, Mountain Lion. And of course the answer was software, so most of the class sat down, but I noticed some were hesitating to sit down, so I started picking people out. Right, you're out. And the people who were out, they had to sit down, fold their arms in a frowny face posture. Then we tried cupcake, Nokia Lumia 610, Office 2013, and this went on, and then I started teasing them a little bit. So apple pie, obviously that's a cake, Sony Vaio, Manchester Tart, MacBook Pro, Raspberry Pi. And of course, some people who haven't been reading the news thought Raspberry Pi was a cake. And we managed to wipe out lots of people in the class with that one. And some other ones that, you know, sounded quite close, like ice cream sandwich. Lots of people thought that was a cake. And we said, well, no, actually, although it is a cake, it's also software. It's an operating system. So after we played our little game, I issued them with exercise books for the first time, and sticking with the terms hardware, software, input, output, process, storage and transmission, I wrote them on the board, asked them, this is sort of a bit traditional teaching, copy these down into your books, but try to come up with a definition for each one and an example. And let's see, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So there was 4 other terms as well that I wanted them to come up with a definition and an example. So there was things like operating system. I forgot what the other ones were, but I'd have to look at an exercise book. So once the children had all written down their definitions and examples, I asked them to swap books with their partner. And quite quickly, I went through what I would say is a succinct and concise definition of what these terms were with examples, and they had to score the person whose book they were marking a point for each definition and each example. Somehow it worked out that we had a maximum of 23. I was impressed that there was a couple of children in the class that scored 22, but it ranged right down to some people who'd only scored 3 or 4. So interesting, we've got a starting point there so we can figure out where we can improve. For the person who scored 22 out of 23, that's not going to be too much of a challenge. So the third part of the lesson, we'd actually spent quite a bit of time on that, and I asked them to share their books among each other. You know, if there was one you got wrong, get the answer from somebody else. This was afterwards. So we did spend a lot of time going over. There was some things where there was misapprehension over certain terms. So I spent a lot of time correcting, going through, explaining the differences between some of those. And then about 10 minutes before the end of the lesson, I explained that for homework this week, I want them to take their book home and turn the outside cover of the book into a timeline of computing, but they have to choose a particular aspect. So I showed them some timelines that I'd found in a very short Google search. So we had like a timeline of games consoles. We had a timeline of social media. So it started with things like the Telegram, posting things back in 550 BC. Obviously, the Telegram came later than that. What else was there? It went through telephone, ARPANET, internet, those kind of things, right up to the modern day. We had another computing timeline, which was hardware through the ages, and I suggested that they could do any of those or some other ones. For example, key women pioneers in computing that they could put on a timeline and see what impact and contribution that they made. So that's what I set for homework, and that was pretty much it for Monday's lesson. So now on to today's lesson, Wednesday. So rather than computing theory, I'm trying to balance it so we've got one lesson a week is computing and one theory and one lesson is programming. So in the last episode, I explained how the children had spent a lesson working in a dojo style where I've given them a challenge and they have to work in groups to practice, build, develop a software response to a problem. And then at points and times during the lesson, we're having show and tell where different groups get to show the rest of the class what stage and phase of development that they're at. So I decided to carry on with that in today's lesson. But the first thing at the beginning of the lesson, just a quick way, I wanted to check progress with their homework. So on Monday, I asked them to create a computing timeline and put it onto the cover of their books. Now, I did explain for some people it might take quite a lot more than one evening's homework. And today some of them had sort of half done it, but there were some very impressive ones, so I'm not surprised it's not quite finished. But I asked them to take their books out and show them to each other. And this gave me an opportunity to see, well, quickly who's done the homework, but also for them to get ideas from each other. So the ones who hadn't finished could see what other people had done, and the ones who hadn't started, they could see how other people had done their homework. Now, it had been a week since we'd last done any coding, so I thought the next thing to do, a really good point to start before doing any programming in Python, would be to just refresh a few things from the previous week. So I quickly reminded them that there was the two modes in Python, the interactive mode and the editor mode. We looked back at how we used the print and input functions in the previous lesson. And then I chose a few people to help remind us what the following terms meant, like operators, variables, assignments, strings, integers, what they meant, and reminded them about saving Python programs with the .py extension. But then this was the time when I introduced commenting to them. Now, some children are already familiar with the concept of commenting from when we used it in year 9, but they hadn't all had the same experience. So we looked at some good examples of commenting and some bad ones, and then I said, right, okay, back to your groups that you've chosen to work in, and in such a 15-20 minutes we'll have a mini show and tell. We'll see where people are up to with their solving the challenge. And the challenge was, the Python program has to ask somebody what their name is, what their current age is, and then it's going to say something like, well, hello, Frank, next birthday you will be, and it's going to say the age plus one. Now, I realized after about 10 minutes or so, a lot of the groups started to reach the same stumbling block today, which was the Python function that calls an input, that always returns a string. Now, as part of their challenge, they had to take the person's age and then add one on to give the age that they would be the next birthday. Now, if you take a string and try and add one onto it, Python's not going to do that, because you're basically trying to add two variables together that are mixed data types. So one's a string and one's an integer, and it just doesn't work. But the children, although we'd touched on this last lesson, they clearly hadn't spent enough time on it, and they hadn't quite grasped that. So that was the point where I intervened. Right, stop everybody. What happens when you get an input? Yes, that's right, we get a string. What's a whole number, an integer? Why can we not? And that took a couple of minutes to get that point through, but it seems like once that was a lot of value in stopping there and checking everybody understood that, because we were able to move on from that. However, we then came across another stumbling block later on. So the final part of the program or the script that they've created, most of them are trying to create a sentence within a print function. So it's going to say something like print, open bracket, open quote, hello, Frank, next birthday you will be. And it was going to have the variable, which has got their age in, plus one. Now, what they hadn't realized was the name is a string. The age is now an integer because we've converted it using the age equals int, open bracket, age, close bracket. So they've converted it to an integer at that point. Python can print strings, it can print integers, but it can't print the two together in the one argument. So they hadn't realized that. So that I decided to let them try and figure that out, first of all, rather than just say, hey, oh, come on, here's the solution, this is what you need to do. And thankfully, a lot of groups pretty quickly figured out how to do that bit there. So that's pretty much... Oh, we had a show and tell at the end of the lesson. And in the show and tell, what was really nice was, although I randomly chose three different groups, each group had its own strengths and weaknesses, which I asked the class to address and point out. So the first group we had a very, very long-winded program that essentially worked, but it had redundant bits of code in there. Like at the beginning, they were saying age equals zero. So I asked... Once they'd showed and told the class what they'd done, I then asked members of the class to pick out what were the good bits we could praise them on, what were the things that would make it even better. So somebody correctly pointed out, why does it need to say age equals zero at the beginning of the script? Surely once it's set the age to the age the person is, it doesn't matter. And so we spent a bit of time talking about that, which was great. Then they had lots and lots and lots of commenting in there, but people were saying that there was some unnecessary commenting where it was duplicated. So that was a nice outcome from that. Then we looked at the second group. Now, the second group had something that was much shorter, no commenting, and so there was some value in looking at the strengths and weaknesses of that one. And then the final group presented were the three girls who'd worked together. And they actually had a very, very neat solution to the problem. They'd done it in four lines, but they had no commenting. So, of course, people were saying, oh, dear, you know, you need some commenting there in your code. Although, to be fair to the girls, it was written so neatly and tidily that you could pretty much tell what was going on. But, yeah, of course, we need to be trying to get into good practices. Right, end of the lesson. So I've set some homework today, which was if those people who haven't finished decorating the books with the timeline, they need to finish them off. But also, I've decided to set them a Python programming homework. So, next lesson, everybody in the class has to bring in one piece of paper with some lines of code on it. They can be handwritten, they can have typed them up using just a simple editor, or they could use the Python editor to type them up. But the program that they write has to solve this little problem. It has to take a value from the user, so ask for a number. Then it has to take another number from the user, a second number. And then it has to add the two together and then tell the user the value of these two together. Now, I know by setting that challenge that there's going to be a few little stumbling blocks within that, but I've said to them, it's not vitally important that this thing works. I just want to see what you've managed to do by next lesson, and then we'll share where we're up to. So that's it for this week. So this is the second episode. It'd be great if you could please send any more feedback. I've had lots of positive feedback and also a few point me in the right direction. So I'm really grateful for both types of those. If you are listening to this and you're not a member of Computing at School, I highly recommend that you do join. And what else was I going to mention? I was going to say, I do often get inquiries from non-teachers, say, asking about getting into teaching or more opportunities to work with school. We're planning something for the 11th of October that the Guardian are going to be helping us support. If you're interested, get in touch. That's October, 11th of October 2012. So obviously, if you listen to this after then, sorry, you missed out on a great day. Thanks for listening and keep in touch. Thank you.